This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. The 2009 North American International Auto Show in Detroit opens to the public Saturday at a calamitous time for the industry. Automakers are in perilous financial condition, and concerns about gas prices and climate change are driving demands for manufacturers to abandon their gas-guzzling models of the past and embrace new, greener technologies. But the automakers' distress is producing bargains for car shoppers who have the cash or credit to buy now. Our guest, Paul Eisenstein, has been writing about the auto industry for 30 years, contributing to a wide variety of publications. His new web magazine, called The Detroit Bureau, launched online today. He spoke to us yesterday from the floor of the auto show, which opened to members of the media and industry insiders earlier this week. Well, Paul Eisenstein, welcome back to Fresh Air. I always think of the auto show as sort of embodying that thrill you get when you get a new car. I mean, the smell of and the feel and the excitement of it. And of course, the auto show, my sense in the past is that people have really showcased power and speed and luxury and high-tech gadgets. But, you know, the automakers got shellacked in the media when they appeared before Congress and had taken their corporate jets there. And I wonder, as they approach this one, are they worried about hitting the wrong tone in some major way again?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that an auto show like this is normally known for is this, first of all, the elaborate staging. You look at Chrysler, which was traditionally a manufacturer that loved auto shows because they would put on these incredible, incredible reveals. 20-some years ago when they launched their first Jeep Grand Cherokee, they drove the thing up the steps of the convention center, smashed through a plate glass window. They literally launched a minivan over the heads of their two top executives. They dropped a pickup truck from the ceiling rafters, and everybody else tried to do the same thing. This is a very downsized show. Chrysler basically has nothing at their exhibit except cars. It looks like a slightly spread out new car dealer showroom. Most of the dinners have been canceled or cut way back. Interestingly enough, the only ones that are putting on the sort of lavish spreads that we normally expect in Detroit, at least during media days, were the Germans. They went on with business as usual, occasionally pouring a few glasses of Louis XIII cognac during their press previews.
The auto industry has always loved gadgets and new technology. Is it more important than ever nowadays?
Absolutely. In fact, where leather and wood and good design might have been the big distinguishers in years past between one brand and another, particularly between mainstream and luxury, it's all about technology today. And when you look at a product like the Mercedes E-Class, which was launched with much fanfare here, It really is the technological automobile. Mercedes has a system that can tell where to aim the headlights so that when you're using your brights late at night, it won't get into the oncoming traffic's eyes. It has a system on board that can tell when you're likely to have an accident, to help you steer away from that, and if necessary, to almost create an emergency cocoon if you're going to have that accident to reduce the likelihood of injuries or death. There's even a new system on the Mercedes E-Class that will jiggle you, let you know when you're starting to get a little drowsy. It'll flash a coffee cup on its display screen to say, you're tired, pull over and have a little Java.
I guess the worry is that those safety features, if they malfunction, might, I don't know, put your lights into oncoming traffic or steer you into the wrong lane.
That's interesting you say it. I was actually testing a new Ford system which can park itself automatically. Literally, all you have to do is hit the button. It'll figure out where the parking spot is that you can fit into. You do manage the gas and brake, and they don't want to give that up entirely because they want to make sure that you ultimately have control. If there is a malfunction, your foot's still on the brake.
Well, let's talk about some of the innovations that the auto companies have made to deal with the needs for better fuel economy, lower emissions, greenhouse gases. There's hybrids. I mean, the Prius is sort of the gold standard, but a lot of car makers have hybrids. What are you seeing this year in that area?
Let me tell you what the single word you heard more than anything else here at the show this year: electrification. by the middle of next decade, virtually every car on the market is likely to have something called stop-start. You see it in most of the hybrids now. You come to a stoplight, put your foot on the brake, the car, the gasoline engine actually shuts off briefly. Lift your foot off the gas to start up, and the engine will kick back in again. This can save 5% or more of your fuel economy. I mean, it's amazing how little things can yield such big results. Now, you move up a little bit, you get something like what's called a mild hybrid, where energy is recaptured as you drive during braking or coasting. And then it's reused, say, when you do start up at that light to help you reuse electric power to drive off. That can save another 5 or 10% of your fuel economy. And then you get into full hybrids. You mentioned the Prius, which, by the way, they launched an all-new one here, which will probably get another 10 or 15% better fuel economy than the old one. These full hybrids can also drive for short distances on purely electric power. Now, the real breakthroughs only begin there. And what we're seeing, we saw the production-ready version of Chevrolet's Volt. That's been getting a lot of attention in the last few months. This is a so-called plug-in hybrid, though they like the term extended-range electric vehicle.
So the Volt does have a gasoline engine, right?
Right. The plug-ins will have a gas engine. There are full electrics, which we should probably talk about, too. But there are different approaches to this technique. Some of the plug-ins, at night or when you're at work, you plug the car in. It has a bigger battery pack than today's typical hybrid, enough that you might get 20, 30, even 40 miles of range, typically enough for your daily commute, purely on battery power. That gasoline engine may never run. GM takes a little bit different approach, where even when the gasoline engine does kick in, it'll be only operating as a generator. So you'll always have the wheels turning by electric power. What's really good about this compared to the old battery cars, you know, California had this experiment with battery cars a little more than a decade ago, and it failed miserably. And we blame the manufacturers in movies like Who Killed the Electric Car? And
right.
The fact was, consumers walked away because even though these cars could typically do your commute, I call it the over the meadow and through the woods syndrome. The fact is that even though you may never typically drive every day of the week but one, 30 or 40 miles, on that last day, if you want to go, you know, take a long trip, you want to go visit your family, you want to know that that car will have the range, and you don't want to have to stop every 80 or 100 miles for an 8-hour recharge.
All right, so let's talk about electric cars. I mean, how real, how ready are they? True electrics.
That's a real question. To get to the true electric means some radical transformations in technology. Right now, we're using, in most of the hybrids, what are called nickel metal hydride batteries. These are ubiquitous. They're everywhere, from electric razors to, laptops. But laptops are making the transition. Cell phones are making the transition to the next generation battery, probably the biggest breakthrough in battery technology in 20 years, and that's the lithium-ion battery. But it's one thing to put lithium-ion batteries in a cell phone, which, by and large, you keep in your pocket, stays about the same temperature. It's small, doesn't have huge power demands. Now, put it inside an automobile. One car company, a little startup in California, has called Tesla, has 6,831 little lithium-ion cells in its Tesla Roadster. And that's a small vehicle. That's a lightweight carbon fiber sports car. Now, imagine trying to put enough batteries into something big, like a mid-sized sedan or even a light truck, and you're talking huge numbers. And these have to operate in ranges from 40 below zero in Minnesota to 120 degrees, Palm Springs in the middle of a hot summer. Will the technology work? They're still skeptics, but every single automaker you talk to now is committing to lithium-ion, and quickly.
When we talk about electric cars, the Chinese are making advances in this area, right? Both in battery technology and are beginning to manufacture cars. Are we going to be driving Chinese electric cars in a few years?
Well, the question is whether we'll be driving Chinese cars at all. We've been seeing Chinese automakers show up in Detroit for the North American International Auto Show now. What is this, the third or fourth year they've been here? And we have seen a lot of improvements. The very first year, I remember walking over to one brand, and they didn't even have the badge stuck on right. It was hanging at a sort of an angle and was ready to fall off. It wasn't exactly the most promising display. There's a video going around about one brand that's actually on sale in Europe, and the crash test is frightening. You don't want to be in that car. But the Chinese are improving quality at a rapid rate, and it's very, very likely that we'll see the first Chinese brand on the market with a relatively conventional internal combustion engine within, I'd say 18 months to 24. But one of the ways that I think the Chinese makers hope to make a dent here is not necessarily by being even cheaper than the Koreans, who are even cheaper than the Japanese, but by having some breakthrough technology. And the Chinese, in part because of their own environmental concerns, have made a big push into environmental technology, which leads us to a brand called BYD.
And what, they make cell phone batteries, right?
Yeah, interestingly enough, now they've been dating back to, I think, 1985 as a battery company. And they shocked everybody. In fact, I think their chairman was seriously excoriated for making a move into automobiles about 7 years ago. It's like, what are you doing? You've become one of the largest battery makers in the world. Why do you want to build cars? But he saw the opportunity to create a market. They have a bunch of conventional internal combustion engines, gasoline engines, but they are pushing hard into the electric vehicle space.
And they claim to have a car that has a range of 250 miles, is that right?
They claim to. Most everyone here is pretty skeptical of it. One of the things you can do is you can pull every possible ounce of energy out of a battery to get the maximum range. That, unfortunately, is also a recipe for killing the battery much more quickly than you would if you carefully control it. We're getting real technical. I'll try to keep this simple, but the way to make lithium batteries work is to only use part of the power that they're capable of storing. These guys seem to use every ounce of it, so we'll have to wait and see. They're actually selling some of these in China, and I think we're going to be watching to see if they hold up and actually deliver anywhere near promise. But 250 miles, if you do that, now you're getting a full gas tank's worth of driving range out of it. And they say that they can charge up 50% of that range in another 10 minutes with special chargers. This is the paradigm shift that a lot of people are waiting for.
With all of this new technology, I mean hybrids and plug-ins, and is the auto service industry keeping up? Am I going to be able to find a mechanic that can work on this stuff?
Yeah, that's a real good question. It is a real challenge to have your stuff serviced. It's actually good news, I guess, for the car dealers, the new car dealers, because it makes it easier for them to keep a customer even after they run out of warranty. In the old days, you'd leave and try to find some cheaper local service station. But it is a problem. And one of the biggest warranty issues that consumers face is getting repairs on faulty electronic gear.
Let's talk about buying a car. If you're in a position in this recession where you need and have the resources to buy a new car, is this the best time ever? You'd think that automakers are dying to get cars off the lot.
Well, this is sort of Dickensian. This is the best of times. This is the worst of times. Can you get the credit or do you have the money in the bank? Then, boy, are you in for a great deal. If you have to go for credit and you don't have the perfect score, you could be, I think the technical term is screwed. The reality is you can negotiate on everything, even the hybrid Prius, which 4 months ago you were paying well above sticker price. Now you can get a deal. They'll throw in the floor mats for free and a lot of other options as well. My gosh, I've heard of people on full-size pickups getting $10,000 and $12,000 off the sticker price. There are a couple of dealers that have been advertising buy one car, get another one free. And they mean it. Dealers pay a significant charge, interest rate, what they call floor planning, when they have cars sitting around unsold. So it's costing them money to keep that car. And in some cases, these cars have been sitting around for 4, 5, 6 months. That's why Chrysler shut down virtually the entire assembly operation, the entire company, for more than a month to get inventories for dealers down, to get their own inventory down. So they want to move cars. And if you looked at the numbers, even Toyota's been down 30, 35, 40% in recent months. So there isn't a car maker in the business right now, even Ferrari, that isn't struggling a bit.
Now, there's been also been a lot of reporting about dealers that are in trouble and predictions that, frankly, hundreds if not thousands of dealers will be eliminated in the coming year or so. Should you be worried about buying a car from a dealer that might not be here in 6 months or a year? And is there a way to find out if they will be?
I don't know of any easy way to find out unless you're really savvy about finances and you have great connections in the community. Sometimes dealers who look great one day close down the next, surprising even their competitors. But these days, I don't think people worry as much about whether or not they can go back to the same dealer. The reality is your warranty will be honored by the guy down the block or on the other side of town if you need to. So if you find the car you like, you get a good deal, buy it, and don't worry so much about whether that dealer is going to be the one to service you. But there's no question. Oh, dealers are falling like the proverbial dominoes. A couple of months ago when I looked at some of the numbers, and I'm going to actually be looking again because I have a few pieces to write on the dealer crisis, but as of the fall, they were dropping at the rate of about two a day across the country. In some cases, that included mega dealers who operated numerous showrooms. And I believe that in the fourth quarter, when the industry's sales totally collapsed, that rate of attrition has fallen. Now, here's a curious thing. This is great news if you're the automaker. They are jumping for joy seeing dealers going out of business. They want more and more and more to go out of business rather than having to shut them down on their own.
Why?
Well, once upon a time, way back when Henry Ford was moving the Model T and he was being challenged by GM's Billy Durant and other GM leaders who said that they wanted to build a car for every pocketbook and purpose, having as many dealers as possible was great news because you won by marketing muscle. But what's happened is the Japanese changed that paradigm. They came in and said, we don't want a lot of dealers. We just want good dealers. We don't want these guys competing against each other. So, you know, today you have a Ford dealer on one block and maybe another one a half mile or a mile away, and they're competing on price. They're battling each other rather than battling Toyota. And that's driving down the cost and to cut corners so that they can sell cars below sticker. They may be cutting back on service and so on, which ultimately hurts the brand's experience and reputation. So everybody's moving into the Japanese model, which is fewer, better dealers, carefully spaced around town in better locations rather than in neighborhoods where they can get land for a bargain.
Now, another thing that people might be thinking about is whether the car company they buy from is going to be around in a year. You know, years back, one of the ways that U.S. automakers overcame concerns about quality was to offer these extended engine and powertrain warranties. So you had some assurance that if the transmission blew in 2 years, you were protected. Should I worry about buying a car from a company that might not be around in a couple of years to honor my warranty?
Now, that is an issue. And that's one of the reasons why you saw a big drop in the sales of the big three products in the last few months when there was a lot of concern about whether they would be around long term. The reality is that we are very unlikely to see GM, Ford, or Chrysler simply vanish. They may get taken over. The assets will be taken over by another automaker, perhaps. It seems probably better than even odds that Chrysler will either merge or be purchased by yet another company in the next year or so. But they fooled us, so I don't want to say it's 100%, but I think the odds are fairly likely. And I don't think that these guys are going to go away. So I think if you like one of their products, I think you have a good shot that you are going to be able to get warranty coverage going forward.
Financing, of course, is an issue. Can you get financing? And what about lease deals that used to be available? It seemed like they were always advertising these great leasing deals.
Well, first of all, the lease, unfortunately, is disappearing at a fast pace. And that's largely because the people who apparently were designing lease programs for the auto industry were moonlighting on subprime mortgages. They just made a mess of it and lost the automakers billions of dollars. Can you get loans out there? Yeah, you can. Unfortunately, if you don't have great credit, in some cases, you may be paying well into double-digit numbers to get a car loan. Now, we've seen it loosen up a little bit. One of the areas, one of the few areas where the federal bailout of the banks has helped is we're starting to see a little loosening in automotive finance, particularly financed by what are called the captive finance subsidiaries, like General Motors Acceptance Corporation. They were declared a bank, and a couple days later, I think they got $4 billion, and a couple days later, they lowered significantly the credit score you need to have to get money. And if you don't get it there, there are banks, there are other companies that are lending money right now, but you better have good credit, because if not, you could pay a premium.
Well, Paul Eisenstein, I'm sure we'll be checking back with you. Thanks so much for your time, and enjoy the show.
It's been my pleasure to be with you.
Paul Eisenstein has written about the auto industry for 30 years. His new web magazine, The Detroit Bureau, went online today. He joined us from the Detroit Auto Show. Special thanks to station WDET, who let us use their broadcast booth at the show.